Okay, I'm calling the Senate State Affairs, I'm sorry, Senate Rules Committee meeting to order. Today is Tuesday, May 8th, and time is 5:20, I believe. Members present is Senator Kelly, Senator Machicki, Senator McKinnon, and Senator Gardner. So we do have a, and myself, Senator Meyer. So we have a quorum to conduct business. Today's agenda is just one bill, House Bill 312, which is Crimes Against Medical Professionals. And this is, we do have the sponsor here, Representative Klayman. A little history on this bill. The bill was first heard Senate Judiciary on March 21st, and then was sent to Rules Committee. And as part of our deep concern to deal with crime in Alaska, and not just the crime against medical professionals, we embarked in discussions with the sponsor of this bill, Representative Klayman, to find a way forward. And we started the discussion and to add other crime-related bills to Representative Klayman's House Bill 312. And so at this time, so we can talk about the committee substitute, I'm going to ask Senator Kelly for a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee adopt Senate CS for HB 312 rules version 30-LS1225/M as our working document.
Version M, is it? Yeah, it is M, yes. Okay, so an object, so we have the committee substitute before us. And at this time, I'd like to ask Representative Klayman if he would please come forward and explain the committee substitute for the Rules Committee. I want to welcome, we have several legislators here with us, Representative Josephson, Representative Reinbold, and Representative Ledoux. Okay, so welcome, Representative Klayman, to Senate Rules. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first and foremost, I just want to thank your office and your staff. As you know, we've spent more hours than either of us calculated working through a lot of details and trying to come up with a approach that's now in House Bill 312 that I think reflects the priorities for Alaska to address public safety concerns in a way that responds to what we've heard from the public, but also continues our commitment to find ways to use our public safety dollars in a wise and effective manner. What I have is a sectional analysis, and I'll go through that sectional analysis. There's a few places in which I'll provide some additional commentary on some of the issues as we go through that sectional analysis. First, Section 1 provides the legislative intent, stating that the 48-hour hold on defendants with out-of-state criminal histories will no longer apply once the assessment tool includes those convictions or charges. Sections 2 through 7 address the concept that was initially introduced as Senate Bill 146 and House Bill 291, as well as House Bill 387 regarding the Attorney General scheduling controlled substances. Section 2 designates the President of the Board of Pharmacy as the Chair of the Controlled Substances Advisory Committee. Section 3 makes conforming changes to the Controlled Substance Advisory Committee enabling statute. Section 4 adds a new duty to the Controlled Substance Advisory Committee, which is to advise the Attorney General on the need to schedule substances for emergency regulation. Section 5 allows the Attorney General to schedule substances by emergency regulation and clarifies that the Attorney General may schedule a substance by emergency regulation only if the substance is currently listed on the federal controlled substance schedule. And just I would note that the original version of the bill did not place that limit on the Attorney General's authority. They could have listed any substance, and this version specifically limits the Attorney General's authority to only those substances the federal government has already listed. The Attorney General shall also post a notice on the Alaska Online Public Notice System 60 days before the effective date of an emergency regulation that schedules a substance, and the notice must include written findings. Section 6 defines controlled substances to include those scheduled by the Attorney General by an emergency regulation. And Section 7 defines substance to include a drug-controlled substance or immediate precursor in the schedule set out in statute or that is scheduled by the Attorney General by emergency regulation. Sections 8 and 9 are part of our from House Bill 312, which is the where all this started with crimes against medical professionals. Section 8 establishes that a peace officer may arrest a person without a warrant when the peace officer has probable cause to believe that the person has committed an assault in the fourth degree, a misdemeanor, at a health care facility, and the person was not seeking medical treatment at the facility or was stable for discharge. And I would note that this, the police officer's authority to arrest without a warrant, it extends here to misdemeanors without any change in the law. The present law today specifically allows peace officers to arrest for probable cause for any felony assault, and that's without a warrant. So there's no change in the law with regard to felony offenses. And Section 9 establishes the definition of healthcare facility. Sections 10 through 16 of the bill address out-of-state convictions in the context of pretrial release, an area which the public has had a lot of interest. Section 10 allows the prosecution additional time to demonstrate that the release of the person will not reasonably assure their appearance in court or the safety of the community if the person is to be held for up to 48 hours, and they're allowed a 48-hour hold if the person has an out-of-state criminal conviction or charge that has not been used in determining the person's risk level in the risk assessment tool. And the whole topic of the pretrial risk assessment tool and the topic of out-of-state felonies is really central to issues that have been under discussion. We have learned over the course of time that giving judges unfettered discretion in making pretrial release decisions was actually not improving public safety. Detailed analysis of 20,000 Alaska cases from 2014 through 2015, which was studied before the passage of any justice reform legislation, showed that 37% of those on pretrial release were arrested for new crimes. This historic level of new offenses while on pretrial release was simply not acceptable. Alaska has a long history of restricting judicial discretion. When judges were inconsistent in their felony sentencing decisions from one judge to another and from one region to another in the 1960s and 1970s, we enacted a comprehensive sentencing reform structure in 1980 to ensure more consistent sentences and establish mandatory minimums and sentencing ranges for all classes of felonies. Similarly, when judges were too lenient with DWI offenders and mothers against drunk driving became much more involved, the legislature changed the laws to require mandatory minimum sentences for first-time and repeat offenders, another example of restricting judicial discretion. Justice reform legislation places similar...
Are you still following the sectional, or did you go off script a little bit?
Well, I've had some comments along the way, so this is some of the commentary.
Oh, okay.
I'll be back to Section 11.
Okay, very good.
I do have some commentary along the way, and this was because we were getting into the question of judicial discretion.
Okay.
That's where I have those comments. This bill and the existing justice reform legislation places similar limits on judges' discretion. The good news is that our investment in stronger pretrial supervision is already showing public safety improvements. Data from April of this year shows that of the individuals under pretrial supervision, less than 5% of those individuals had active arrest warrants. That's a substantial improvement from the new offense rate of 37% when judges had unfettered discretion. Section 11 makes conforming changes to clarify that a judge may order a person released on their own recognizance or upon unsecured bond unless other provisions of the statute provide otherwise. Section 12 makes conforming changes so that persons who have an out-of-state criminal charge or conviction that has not been used in determining the person's risk level by the risk assessment tool will not be required to be released on their own recognizance or upon an unsecured bond. Section 13 changes the mandatory release on their own recognizance for low-risk Class C felonies to a presumptive OR, and that's for low-risk Class C felonies. Low-risk misdemeanors and moderate-risk misdemeanors remain mandatory release on their own recognizance except when modified by out-of-state criminal history as described earlier. And one comment about the misdemeanors. Misdemeanor crimes against the person, misdemeanor sex offenses, misdemeanor crimes involving domestic violence, misdemeanor DWI offenses, misdemeanor failure to appear offenses, and misdemeanor violation of conditions of release are not included in the mandatory release on their own recognizance. So the over all of the violent offenses against the person are not included in any of the mandatory release provisions. Section 14 makes conforming and technical changes to the mandatory conditions of release. Section 15 makes conforming changes to clarify that the court shall consider out-of-state convictions when determining the conditions of release. Section 16 changes the law so that when a defendant who would otherwise be mandatorily released on their own recognizance has an out-of-state criminal conviction or charge, the judicial officer may require monetary bail upon a finding that there is clear and convincing evidence that other conditions are not sufficient to ensure public safety. Section 17 of the bill addresses the bill that had been introduced as Senate Bill 149 and House Bill 294 regarding surcharges for criminal offenses. Section 17 increases the felony surcharge upon conviction from $100 to $200, increases the surcharge for a misdemeanor DUI offense from $75 to $150, increases the surcharge for a misdemeanor or a violation of a municipal ordinance if a sentence of incarceration may be imposed for the misdemeanor or ordinance violation other than a provision identified in Section 2 from $50 to $100, and increases the surcharge for misdemeanors and violations or infractions under state or municipal code where incarceration may not be imposed from $10 to $20. And in rough terms, that means all the criminal surcharges are doubled. Section 18 returns to the portions of the bill addressing crimes against medical professionals. Section 18 adds an aggravator to Alaska's felony sentencing statute when a defendant commits the offense at a healthcare facility and knowingly directs the conduct constituting the offense at a medical professional during or because of the medical professional's exercise of their professional duties. Sections 19 through 21 returns to the issue of out-of-state convictions and pretrial release. Section 19 authorizes pretrial services officers to file complaints with the court, arrest with or without a warrant, and request the court to issue warrants related to any violation or conditions of release. In a comment on this section, the current law as passed by the legislature has actually led to some dispute within the trial courts. Some courts have ruled that pretrial services officers have the authority to file complaints with the court, while other courts have ruled that pretrial service officers do not have that authority to file complaints. This exercise of judicial discretion highlights the need for the legislature to step in from time to time and remove judicial discretion by, in this instance, confirming the authority of pretrial service officers to file complaints with the court. Section 20 makes conforming changes to ensure pretrial services officers can file complaints with the court, arrest with or without a warrant, and request the court to issue warrants related to violation of conditions of release. Section 21 allows the Attorney General to schedule a substance by emergency regulation. Section 22 requires notice of an emergency regulation scheduling a controlled substance to be published on the Alaska Online Public Notice System. And I want to apologize. I think in my earlier introduction, Section 21 and 22 obviously read it to the Attorney General controlled substance and not to the pretrial release. But continuing in Section 23 through 28, those are all relating to the AG controlled substance authority. Section 23 requires the public notice of an emergency regulation scheduling a controlled substance to include a summary of the Attorney General's compliance with the procedure set out in proposed AS 1171-125. Section 24 exempts the procedure for scheduling a controlled substance by emergency regulation from the regular emergency regulations process. Section 25 adds authority to issue regulations to schedule a controlled substance by emergency regulation and adds that to the current emergency regulation procedure. Section 26 exempts the procedure for scheduling a controlled substance by emergency regulation from the 120-day time limit for other emergency regulations. Section 27 provides that a substance scheduled by the Attorney General for emergency regulation will remain on the schedule for a period not to exceed 1,095 days. And for those that are fast with calculators, that's 3 years, unless the legislature schedules the substance by law or annuls the regulation by law. And a comment on Section 27, this is one of the changes in the bill from what the governor had initially suggested. There was a real interest in not in having the legislature maintain its authority to have final word on scheduling the substances, but we wanted the Attorney General to have the ability to do that quickly. But if the legislature chose not to act after 3 years, it would become unlisted. And, of course, during that three-year period, the legislature could act as fast or as quickly as it wanted. And in that period, if the legislature didn't said, this is a bad idea, we want it, don't want to schedule it, we wouldn't have to wait for 3 years to unlist it. But basically, final authority in the listing would come to the legislature. But this would give the governor and the Attorney General the flexibility to list them more quickly. And Section 28 amends the state policy on emergency regulations to clarify that the section does not limit the Attorney General's authority to schedule a controlled substance by emergency regulation. The remaining sections, Section 29 through 32, address court changes, applicability, conditional effect, and effective dates. Section 29 involves the indirect court rule amendment. Sections 11 to 15 of the bill have the effect of changing Criminal Rule 41 by changing release conditions for defendants, so there would be changes to the court rule based on Section 29. Section 30 provides applicability provisions. The Act applies to offenses committed on or after the effective date. Section 31 is the conditional effect that the Act only takes effect if the indirect court rule amendment receives a two-thirds majority vote. And Section 32 provides an effective date that only sections applicable to pretrial release will take effect immediately. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions the committee may have with regard to the committee substitute for House Bill 312.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Representative Klayman. And you brought up a good point that I should have mentioned when we started, that this bill, House Bill 312, with several other bills rolled into it. These were bills originally introduced by the governor, and they've since been enhanced or changed either in House Judiciary or Senate Judiciary. And then what we're doing here is the rules is just kind of rolling them all together into one bill. Okay, questions from committee members? Senator Gardner.
Thank you. I have a few.
I'll remove my objection and have the CS before us, then we'll talk to the CS. Okay.
Okay.
I'll remove my objection. Senator Gardner.
Okay. Thank you. So I came here with a few questions, and then I have some that just came out of this part of the presentation. So if a substance is currently on the federally controlled substance schedule, it's not automatically on the state controlled substance schedule. It has to be sort of incorporated?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, that's correct. We historically, well, up until any change by this bill, any addition to the state-controlled substance list has to be done by an act of the legislature. And so it would mean that one of these, what we call it, a designer, like Spice was the example. When Spice first came out, it took a while for the legislature to approve that, so only the federal government could prosecute Spice because they do this by regulation. And so this would essentially allow the Attorney General to, after the federal government has acted, to step in and say, we want to be able to prosecute these two.
Thank you. And if I might, Mr. Chair.
Please go ahead.
So Section 18, you used the phrase knowingly directed the conduct, and it sort of comes to the heart of the original bill. Are the concern about the original bill, I think, which has to do with people who are in a mental health crisis or under the influence of some substance or something has happened to them that we wouldn't hold them responsible for the things they say and do. Is this the aspect that might give comfort to people who would be especially vulnerable to that?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, that was certainly the intent of the bill. In earlier discussions of the crimes against medical professionals include an automatically enhanced sentence so that if you could prove these factors, you would have a higher sentence. And because of the very concern you raise about what happens if somebody that is not in their right mind or acting under various psychiatric or psychological challenges, if that's going on, even if they could establish it, it would only be an aggravating factor that the judge might choose to apply or not apply. So whenever you've got an aggravating factor in the sentencing structure, the judge has discretion about whether to increase the sentence or leave it the same. But here, because you'd have to say it was knowingly directed, unless you could show the person actually knew that they were directing it at a medical professional and that they were acting within the course of their duties, the judge, they wouldn't be able to prove that knowing element to be able to even get to that step of enhancing the sentence.
Okay, thank you. And if I'm right, Mr. Chair. So Section 29, indirect court rule amendment, and it talks about changing release conditions for defendants. Can you elaborate a little bit, or is that simply the mandatory OR releases that is being changed?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, it's only the changes that are in the bill, so that the changes to the court rule would involve actually two different parts. One would be the changing the mandatory own recognizance release for Class C felonies. Mm-hmm. That would now be presumptive OR release but not mandatory. And then the other change would be relating to information regarding out-of-state charges and convictions, so that those out-of-state charges and conviction which previously had not been considered now will be considered. And then the expectation with Department of Corrections is that the assessment tool will incorporate those out-of-state charges and convictions probably by the end of the year. And at that point, once they're incorporated in the tool, then that wouldn't be a basis to go outside the analysis. But today, once the bill passes, then the judges would be able to go to a presumptive OR based on those out-of-state charges and convictions.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Chair,
yes,
I had a list of other questions, but I think some of them were addressed very well in this sectional. But the one, can you describe how pretrial is working now?
Thank you. Through the chair, I have had conversations with, number of conversations and communications with Department of Corrections, and I've also talked with practitioners in the field. The Department of Corrections has described the pretrial risk assessment tool and also the use of the pretrial services officers as showing improvements already. Of course, we hired, I think, 60 pretrial services officers and had to get those folks trained up. And part of what they do is they supervise people that are charged with crimes more consistently. It's like phone calls and saying, you know, you've got a court hearing tomorrow, you need to be there, or you've got an appointment with whoever, and you need to do those things. And so they're tracking and paying more attention to folks on pretrial release. And so that's working, and I passed out the information I received from Department of Corrections showing how many fewer offenses are going on. So those are going well. And they're obviously, whenever you start with a whole system and you've got a whole analytical analysis that's part of it, nothing ever works perfectly, but I think they're making real progress, and I think they're pleased with the progress they're making. And then the other thing, I've talked with practitioners in the field to say, what have you seen changes since the pretrial assessment tool and the whole pretrial arrangement took effect? And what they said was the noticeable change, particularly on Monday mornings after the weekend is over, who is still in jail, has dramatically changed. And the change is that you're seeing more folks that are charged with violent crimes. And instead of having people with kind of low-level nonviolent crimes that had little or no prior criminal history that are there on Monday morning because they didn't have the means to post $250 or $500 bail, now you're seeing more and more of the people that are there in the courthouse in the morning because they didn't get out of jail, or people that have prior histories and are there for violent crimes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Gardner. So, Representative Clayman, I think there's a couple things. Again, not having sat on judiciary, I'm not sure what all was discussed, but there are, I know certainly being a representative or senator from Anchorage, a couple concerns were the out-of-state criminals and not being able to look at their charges or convictions, whether it be misdemeanor or felony, which we'll now be able to do. And then I think the second one was especially car theft is very prevalent, unfortunately, in Anchorage. And the fact that that's Class C felony and the judge had no discretion was bothersome, and so this bill takes care of that. For some, this bill doesn't go far enough. I get that, and I'm still not sure I'm comfortable with how we tell folks that we're dealing with the lower level misdemeanors and moderate level. What would your response be, Representative Clement?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the chair. First, with regard to the auto thefts, and I've heard the same things you've heard, and I've heard them consistently, and that was part of the reason why we made it in discussing whether to take any of the categories of mandatory OR and put it to presumptive OR. What we heard from the community about auto theft was the dominant reason we said we've got to make it so that judges have that discretion, and the presumptive OR is fine but not mandatory OR for those Class C felonies, and it covers all Class C felonies. With regard to the misdemeanors, I think the most important part to communicate to the public is that the group of misdemeanors that would qualify are as low risk and moderate risk by definition don't include violent crimes. And that was the whole discussion I had in discussing that section, because you've got your assault, your misdemeanor assaults, your misdemeanor sex crimes, your misdemeanor crimes involving violations of conditions of release, your misdemeanors involving driving while intoxicated, all the places that put the public at greatest risk and have the greatest potential for injury to the public, those are the crimes that will never be mandatory OR. And so we're only talking about folks that have very limited criminal history and the crimes they're charged with are nonviolent crimes.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Clayman. And I'm assuming then even the nonviolent misdemeanors, the more times a person gets picked up, then the higher they rate in the risk assessment category, and then ultimately we'll get to the higher level, and then judge will have discretion. Is that correct?
That's exactly correct. And those repeat offenses are it's easy to qualify as low risk when it's your first time, and then it gets less and less likely.
I have one question for you, Representative Clayman. The aggravator on the felony assault statute when a defendant commits the offense at a health care facility knowingly directed the conduct, that would not be a defense against alcohol, the effects of alcohol or substance abuse. Is that correct? Is there a personal responsibility requirement on that if unknowingly directed?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, I can't quote you the statute, but there is a statute that talks about when somebody's mental state is affected by alcohol that you scale it. You don't get to claim alcohol intoxication as the defense to knowing. You look at what would they know were they not intoxicated. And this is, of course, an aggravating factor at sentencing as opposed to an element of the crime itself. So typically those mental states go into the crime itself, but somebody that's intoxicated as opposed to somebody who's suffering from a psychiatric disorder would, I believe, get treated very differently by the courts.
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't missing something that was an out for that particular charge, but it sounds like that's not the case.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, you're correct. Of course, the underlying, before you even get to the question of the aggravating factor, they would have to find them guilty of the underlying charge, and the aggravating factor becomes a sentencing question and not a liability for the crime itself question.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Senator Machicki, Representative Clayman, I think you were passed a note from your staff there, so you might want to read that before we continue on here in case.
This is the note reminds that the question about, which doesn't go to the aggravating factor, but before you could charge somebody or actually arrest somebody, there would need to be a finding that they were stable for discharge. And stable for discharge addresses both physical issues and psychiatric and psychological issues. And that's related to the EMTALA guidelines from the federal government. And don't ask me what EMTALA stands for, because I don't have my list of all those. words.
Does that satisfy your questioning, Senator Machiki?
It does, yes. Thank you.
Okay. Are there additional questions for the representative? Okay. You good, Senator Gardner? Okay. All right. So with that, there's no additional comments, questions, and Senator Kelly, I'll entertain
Senate
a motion.
Committee substitute for House Bill 312 Rules Version 30-LS1225/N from committee with individual recommendations and forthcoming fiscal notes.
Okay. Is there any objections? Seeing and hearing none, then the bill does move from committee. That concludes our business for today. Thank you, everyone, for staying after. And with that, we are adjourned.